This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Heart, Mind, Wisdom, an anthology of inspiring wisdom from those who have been there. And those who have been there, Joyce Ross and Patricia Connor, the co-authors and also the co-owners of a great new company. I'll let them explain that. But it deals with kindness. And hello, ladies. Boy, it's great to meet some kind ladies.
Hey, Steve. How are you? Hi, Steve.
Well, this is real serious business. And obviously, kindness... Well, it goes more than a mile, doesn't it? It is the answer to most of our problems.
Well, kindness is love in action. If you stop and think about what that word actually means, it means love in action. So one of the most important things that we try to get across to people is that kindness begins with yourself. Because when we're kind to ourselves, we take care of ourselves with our bodies, with our hearts, with our minds. And then we feel better, and we naturally want to be kind to others. So kindness always starts with ourselves and then reaches outward so that you can be kind to other people or to be the love in action with other people.
Tell us about your business, this new business that you have.
Kindness with Key was born actually out of a gambling addiction that I had and a depression that Patricia had. And I will just quickly tell you, because we don't have a lot of time, but I was a gambling addict, made $1 million over 3 years, spent the next 3 years losing it, and kept asking myself, beating myself up, why won't you stop, you know, saying such mean stuff. I was disgusted. And so one day I was actually walking through a casino, and I honestly can't tell you if I won or lost that day, but I turned it up. And I said to the universe or God, I said, what is it that I need? And I really thought that I was going to hear, you need a kick in the butt, or you need to win the lottery, because I'd lost so much money. That's not what I heard. What I heard is, you need to be kind. And I took that to mean that I needed kindness, and that as long as I was berating myself, I would never heal. I would never move away from my gambling addiction. So I came home. Patricia and I have been friends for 30 years, and in business together for 30 years. Not this one, but another one. And we talked about it, and we decided that, yes, kindness was really key to self-healing. It was also key to protecting animals and our planet and each other. And we explored Patricia's depression, and we looked at how kindness was important for her to heal from that, too. Do you want to talk about that, Patricia?
Sure, I can. In my situation, I was in corporate America and doing really well. I actually was at the top of my company. And but realized that that really wasn't what I wanted to do. And what had happened was that I actually was pretty good at my job. And so any problem that there was in the company, they just gave it to me and said, Patricia can do it. So what happened was that I was totally burnt out. And by the time I left the company, I was exhausted and depressed. So I needed to find out what it was that I wanted to do in my life, but when I found myself without a job, I realized that I didn't have an identity. I had been working so many hours for so many years that my whole identity was with the company. And I wasn't kind to myself. I had thoughts of being a failure and, you know, what am I going to do now? And I just was not very good to myself. So I found that by being kind to myself, I was able to start thinking of what I could do next in my life.
Kindness is the key. That's a great name for a company, and obviously you're having some success already, and your book is selling well because people are connecting with you. Tell me about where you got the idea to become anthologists, and explain that, and you know, to help other people to publish their individual healing stories.
It actually was another divine inspiration. Patricia and I got busy with Kindness is Key after we realized that that was such an important concept. We wanted to take it to the world. So we incorporated, got Kindness is Key going. We wrote a whole course out, 4-part course. We wrote the Kindness Ambassador which is another book about our gaming and
depression,
with the 13 kindness keys to self-healing, and it has a romance threaded throughout, so it's quite a fun book. So it's The Kindness Ambassador. And Patricia wrote a book called Purpose, Platform, and Profit, which was the basis of our courses to teach people how to take their message to the world. We got it all together, spent about a year doing that, maybe two, and we froze. We just froze. We didn't start to book classes. We didn't approach people with what we had. We just froze. And we talked about it to each other, and we knew darn well we were scared, but we just decided we would make it a divine intervention thing and say it mustn't be the right time. Well, it wasn't, and it was divine intervention that came next, because the next thing we heard in sort of a silent whispering in our heads was, you need to take other people with you and put them into a book. So we got very excited then and started approaching people and decided to do 13 books. 13 is kind of a lucky number for us. And to put 21 people per book with their healing stories and to take that to the world. And the book eventually became Heart, Mind, Wisdom. That wasn't the original name, but Heart, Mind, Wisdom, because that's what it is. Every one of the people, every one of the 21 co-authors, and Patricia and I have our stories in there too, is actually taking the reader through the experience and the solutions and the healing advice in a very entertaining, easy-to-read, uplifting way. And it's an amazing group of people that we're working with. And the book is similar to Chicken Soup for the Soul. However, the stories are a little bit more in-depth than Chicken Soup, but we've been getting excellent reviews on the book, and we're just very, very proud to know these authors, because they're amazing people, and people just like you and me, and everyone has a story to tell, and we are very honored that we have the capability of bringing these stories to the world.
So this is collection number one. Is that
correct?
Right? Okay, these first 21. Collection number one.
Yeah, I have two others written as well, Steve. We have collection number two and collection number three. They'll be out later in the year. And in the fall, we're actually looking for authors from around our globe to tell their story and help the world heal, beginning in September. So if anybody's listening that has a story to tell, we would love it if they would send us an email.
For example, tell us about Larry Chase.
Larry is a great story. We've actually known Larry for a while, and Larry, his story is about being excessively overweight, and he actually got up to 450 pounds. And one day he woke up and he had a really hard time breathing, and you can read the story in the book, but he thought, this is it. I'm going to go to the doctor, and if there is any damage, if there's no damage to my organs, then I'm going to try and do something about this weight problem, even though he had not been successful for many years of trying. And he did. He went to the doctor, and the doctor said, well, you know, really, you're okay. I don't know how this happened, but you haven't done very much damage to your organs. So he had a chance. And by himself, and he made up his own little formula on how to lose weight, he lost 230 pounds.
Wow, 230 pounds.
Couple years,
yeah.
Yeah, that's he lost a whole person.
He did. And he did it on his own. His formula was 95-5. So 95% of the time he would eat what he called healthy meals, and then he would allow himself 5% of the time to eat whatever he wanted.
Yeah.
You say that each day it's important to remember, quote, be the love, be the miracle.
That's actually the video we just made. It's called Heart Prints, Be the Love, Be the Miracle. And it actually came about, the term Be the Love, Be the Miracle, with the conversation that I had with my father when he was recovering from an operation. And he was, at the time, he's died since, but at the time he was about 85. And he was kind of getting discouraged with being sick and needing operations and getting older. And I said to him, Dad, you never know which day you will be the love or the miracle. You never know what you might do or say. You never know what you might do or say to someone who then does or says something wonderful that helps a lot of people. You have to fight to stay with us, Dad, and get healthy again, because you never know which day you'll be the love or the miracle. And that's where it all came from.
Tell us about Brock Tully.
Brock Tully. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. Brock has actually cycled around North America three times for a total of
10,000 miles each trip.
10,000 miles each trip.
Wow.
And he did that to spread the message of kindness. And he's just an amazing man, and we're so lucky to know him. And in Vancouver, he's actually the person that has put together the World Kindness Concert, which happens every single year. And also another program, which is called Kindness Rocks, and that is an anti-bullying program where they come in with music to all the different schools in the area and talk about anti-bullying. So he's an amazing, amazing person.
Also part of your program, I'm reading here, is not only healing ourselves, but you also say protecting animal and sustaining our planet.
Well, that goes back to kindness is key, right? So when we start by being kind to ourselves, and then we actually want to reach out to others, the animals and the planet, because when we're kind to the planet, we recycle, we reduce, we think about what we're doing. When we're kind to the animals, we care that they might be extinct. Some people go as far as to stop eating meat. And when you're kind, it starts to expand broader and broader and broader. And it actually becomes like a wave that people, if I do something kind for you, you want to do something kind for somebody else, et cetera, et cetera. So it is really key. It's key to everything. It's key to loving yourself, key to loving your family, key to loving your spouse, key to the animals, key to the planet. It's love in action. Kindness is key.
And I see where you feel very strongly about Mercy Ships Charity Hospital Foundation. What are you doing there?
Mercy Ships is an amazing foundation. And what they have is a ship that is a hospital. And they go to Africa, and they go to the poorest, poorest nations of Africa. And if you look at the stats of Mercy Ships, some of these countries that they go to, there is one or two doctors per a million people. And what they do is, and it's all voluntary. All the people that are on this ship are voluntary. And they have doctors and dentists, and they go to the different places in Africa, and they give them free dental and medical care. It's an amazing organization.
That is. I'm very familiar with them. And in fact, they're right here in Texas, not very far from
there. That's
where,
correct. That is correct.
They're not very far from our radio station. We're just up the road a bit. So,
A lot of the volunteers come from North America, too, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it really. And they're about to build another boat. The CEO just recently told me, build another boat. So that's amazing, their success.
From the sales of our book, we donate 5% from the sales of our book to Mercy Ships.
And you also share in the royalties with the co-authors, these others who are sharing their story.
That's right. One of the things that was most exciting for us was to do that. We're huge on community, and we talk about it a lot, whether we're helping another author or helping a musician or helping an artist. We're big on community, working together, sharing what's great about each other, talking about each other's projects. And when we came together with the co-authors, the idea was we would work together, so we all took writing training. All these people were new writers, so Patricia and I taught them writing training. We taught them speaking so that they can take their message out, you know, into groups and in the verbal form. And we edited together. We promote together. We're friends. I mean, they really are amazing group of people, so it's easy to see how we all became buddies. But being able to actually have a project from start right through to the royalties that's actually shared equally, I'm not sure if anybody else has done that, but it was part of that divine message that we got. So that's what we've done, and it's been heartwarming, I guess would be the word, heartwarming.
Well, it certainly has everything to do with the heart, everything that you're talking about, so it makes sense to just put it all under that beautiful, warm, warm heart blanket.
Yeah.
Now, as we wrap up our discussion here, I'm reading you have five restorative categories. Why don't we talk a little bit about quickly those five?
Yes, and the five restorative categories are abundance, inner peace, Nope, that's what's in the book. The five restorative categories are, we're having a tired day, are bouncing back, and in that category is Brock Tooley, because Brock actually suffered greatly from depression and headed out to find himself, and he learned that even though he'd cycled 10,000 miles, the longest distance in the entire trip was between his heart and his head, and once he began to listen to the whispers of his heart, then his head got back in alignment, and he came home and started the kindness concert. So pretty cool. That's the kind of stories in Bouncing Back. Divine Connection is stories such as the one I told you, the whisperings that you hear from above or from the angels. Healing from Loss is an amazing category. Shirley Buchert has a story in there. She lost 6 loved ones in 3 years, and one was her husband, unexpectedly, and 2 were her parents. So she has a lot of courage that she shares with people and different ideas about how you can, you know, keep it together when you lose someone important to you. And there's other stories of healing from loss in there too. Hope is kind of an obvious category. It's filled with inspiration about what people have faced and how they've overcome it and are shining on. And self-actualization is, you know, what we all hope for, to be the best we can be in the most peaceful form that we can be. So those are the 5 categories, and it's a great read.
Tell us how to get your book, Heart, Mind, Wisdom.
So you can get Heart, Mind, Wisdom by going to www.heartmindwisdom.com. And also it's available on Amazon.com and BalboaPress.com. So basically any of the major bookstores are carrying the book. And I really want to encourage people that are listening out there. We really do work in community, and we really do like to help other people. So we do want to hear from people. So if they have initiative that's, you know, to do with kindness or love or peace or hope, send us an email or connect with us through Heart, Mind, Wisdom. And all our contact information, obviously, is on there. And we would be glad to give you some assistance.
Well, thank you so much, Joyce Ross, for being with us.
Thank you, Steve.
And Patricia Connor, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to live La Bella Vita with Dawn Catherine on Toginet.com. Live La Bella Vita. If you're wanting to know all the beauty tricks of the trade and the latest fashion trends before everyone else, this is your show. If you admire celebrities' beauty and their fashion sense, this is your show. Do you love wine and want to know more about the process it takes to make wine from the vine to the bottle? This is your show. Live La Bella Vita. For more on the show and your host, check out our website, labellavitacosmetico.com. This is the kind of show you can sink your teeth into. If you enjoy traveling and food and family, all with an Italian flair, then you can live La Bella Vita with your host, Dawn Catherine. Wednesday nights at midnight, 11 p.m. Central on Toginet.com.
Mark Lipinski is coming to Toginet. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, a live 2-hour show Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com. Creative Mojo. It's fun, entertaining, informative, inspirational, and illuminating. Lipinski has worked on such shows as Oprah, The View, The Joan Rivers Show, and Ricky Lake. He's busy, but he's got the drive to share with Creative Mojo, dedicated to the modern crafter and crafting lifestyle. Dive into the info and enjoy everything from celebs to entertainment news to recipes, quilting and needlework, knitting, painting, woodworking, Christmas crafts, and so much more. This show boldly encourages you to discover and harness your own creative spirit by living creatively every day. For more on Mark and the show, check out marklipinski.com. Don't miss the fun. It's Creative Mojo with Mark Lipinski, Wednesday afternoon starting at 3, 2 Central on Toginet.com.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, 30 Years and 30 Lessons. The author is Natalie Roy, and Natalie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Natalie.
Hello, good morning.
Well, it's great to have you here because you have some great lessons for us to learn, and you have to, this is full disclosure, everyone, she's 31.
Yes, everyone knows. I can't hide it.
You can't hide it. She's 31, but her book is her first 30 years, all the lessons she's learned. You say, this book is a thoughtful and candid look at the first 30 years of my life and what it all means for me and for anyone navigating through their roaring 20s or at any age. So here you've left the roaring 20s and now you're looking back and going, oh my goodness, how did I even make it this far?
Pretty much.
So when did this kind of all gel for you, this great idea? How did this all come about?
Well, a few months before my 30th birthday, you know, I started going through that sort of quarter life crisis thing where we think, you know, what have I done with my life? Have I accomplished enough? Do I have regrets? You know, am I where I thought I would be at this point in my life? You know, and I think that in today's world, a lot of people are doing things a little bit later. You know, our parents and grandparents got married much younger, had children much younger. In my generation, there's just a lot of plethora of choices and different things happening. So I think that also leads to a lot of questions. Are we doing the right thing? Because we're not necessarily taking the conventional path. So for me, I actually was looking back on old journals, and I actually used to write letters to my future children I might one day have every year on my birthday. So when I was 16, I would write a letter to my future daughter saying, oh, you know, I'm dating this person, it's probably your dad, you know, even though I'm 16. and as I was reading these letters, I was looking back, and one particular letter when I was, I think, 13, I had said, you know, when I'm 23, I'm going to have four kids and be married and have a white picket fence and be close to retirement, because to me, 23 was really old. And so at the eve of my 30th birthday, as I'm reading these letters and laughing to myself and just looking back on what my 20s was and what my whole life was, really thinking, you know, I don't have regrets. Everything that happened happened exactly perfectly because I ended up learning this and this and this and this. And so I really just started writing a list of, well, what are the most important things I learned and I experienced in my first 30 years? And lo and behold, there was 30 things. And I thought, well, maybe I should write them down. And then before I knew it, I had a book.
So what is the most important lesson that you've learned in these 30 years? What would you say that is?
Well, you know what the funny thing is? It changes almost every day. Because in one circumstance in my life, I may be thinking, oh, this lesson, you know, about learning how to let go and surrender is really the important one. You know, and then the next day it may be, oh, no, 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 like silencing that inner voice in my head that tells me I'm not good enough is the most important one. And then, you know, the next day it changes and the next day. So it's actually an interesting thing that I'm continually rereading my own book to remind myself to just keep on working on these lessons, because I sort of look at mental fitness the same as I look at physical fitness. Once you get to your goal, you know, you have to keep working on it. It doesn't just all of a sudden you've learned it and it's over. You keep relearning as new circumstances and situations arise in your life. So, and I'm an actress as well. So of course there's a lot of things coming up all the time to have to deal with. So for me, the lesson is always changing, but that's what's good about the book, because it always stays fresh and current for me.
So at 31, have you been close to getting married?
I am married now, as a matter of fact.
I didn't
know that. I'm celebrating my 7-year wedding anniversary this summer. Luckily, I fooled a guy into thinking that I was a good
catch. Don't let him read your book.
What's that?
See, don't let him read your book.
He's actually featured in the book. Actually, there's a chapter that discusses him. He's actually given me a lot of these lessons, and there's one particular chapter that's called "Be Nice to My Wife Today," and that's something that he's been saying to me for years and years and years. Every time I leave the house, every time I run out to an audition, you know, he says, "Be nice to my wife today," because he knows that I'm very hard on myself and a perfectionist, and so he's always reminding me to take that time to be kind to myself and be good to myself, which is a good reminder.
What a smart man.
Most days.
What a smart man.
Yeah, he's
most,
great.
Most self-improvement books come from people a whole lot older. Your voice is much younger. That's got to set your book apart.
Well, I hope so. I think that there was always obviously the fear in me that someone would say, you know, you're 30, 31, what in the world do you have to teach me, especially someone older? And I actually write about this in the book that, you know, I've had this experience where people have said, you know, what can you possibly teach me? You know, you haven't lived even a third of your life yet. And I just think that there's an opportunity for us to learn from everything. You can learn something from a note you find on the ground. You can learn something from a teacher. You can learn something from a guru. You can learn something from a friend. I think that it's the messages and the lessons are important, and it doesn't matter whose voice they come from. But I do think that it's an important thing for people my age to be able to relate to a self-help book from someone who's actually in the trenches with them and who's actually experiencing currently some of the things that they might be going through. I think that it keeps it fresh and it keeps it new. It's an easy read in terms of you don't feel like you're being hit on the head with a big message or something to learn. You know, it's just something that you can relate to. So I hope that people will at any age really be able to experience the lesson, because I think the lessons are ageless and universal. And I hope that being someone younger, it might even open the doors for people my age to start saying, you know, there's no limit to what we can do at any age.
What about people who would pick up your book and say, what is she going to help me with? I've had a terrible life, and it's been much more supportive, and her parents were much more supportive, and her upbringing, and what could she possibly, how could she help me?
Well, that's something that I actually talk about in the book, as I say, you know, I had supportive family and teachers. I had a wonderful life. I have a wonderful husband. I'm sure people would say, yeah, well, what does she know about life? You know, she hasn't really had to struggle the way I might have had. And what I say to that is I had a really, really blessed life, and I was still miserable. I was still hard on myself. I was still mean to myself. I still thought I wasn't good enough. And that was with all the ducks in a row, all the people telling me everything was great and I was lovely. I still didn't believe it. I still struggled. I still just felt some base unhappiness that I couldn't figure out in my 20s. And so I think if myself, who's a girl who seemingly had it all worked out, was struggling, then I'm exactly the kind of person who could help someone else who is struggling. Because the thing is it doesn't matter what life you've been given. It doesn't matter who your family is or what circumstance you've come through. All of us find in our lives that we're chasing something. We're looking for happiness outside of ourselves. We're looking for validation outside of ourselves. And the lessons of this book is no matter who you are, or what you've been through, or what your circumstance, we're all actually the same. We all feel those same feelings. And so I hope that this book is something that will make people really relate to one another. So by me telling, you know, stories of maybe bad or unfortunate or embarrassing things that happened to me in a candid way, it'll open up for other people to not be afraid to tell their own stories and know that they're just not alone.
Your grandmother had a big impact on you.
She did. My grandmother's an incredible woman. She's 76 now. She's still out working. She's a pretty remarkable lady. And I actually was very inspired by her because she wrote her memoirs when she was 75 and gave it to all of our family as a beautiful gift. And I said in that moment, you know, maybe you're never too old or too young to have a story to tell. And I just started writing.
And that chapter is Separation Anxiety. That's what it's titled. Is that the one? Yeah.
Yes, separation anxiety.
Well, talk about... Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What was the question?
I was just looking at some of your other chapters, and you've highlighted a couple of them, like chapter 13, what did you learn from a little bee?
Yeah, so So I was actually at a retreat in Los Angeles. You know, I have such a busy racing mind, and I thought, I know, I'll go to this retreat and I'll learn how to calm my mind and be happy. And I'm the world's worst meditation person. My mind just won't be quiet, so it was just a big challenge for me. And I was given the task to go and spend some time in the desert quietly alone and meditate, and I wasn't allowed to bring a watch or a cell phone, and I thought I was going to die. It was 20 minutes, and I thought I was going to die. And what happened is I ended up seeing this little bee buzzing around, and I had nothing to do, so I was watching the bee, and the little bee fell into this water, and it was struggling against the current and struggling and struggling and struggling and not getting anywhere. And finally, the little bee just sort of surrendered to the current, and lo and behold, the water took him right up onto a little rock. And then he buzzed away. And I thought, well, there's definitely a lesson in that, that we so often fight against the current of our own life, our own experience. We think if we just fight harder, work harder, try harder, you know, maybe we'll get where we want. And sometimes, once you've put your action in, once you've put your best work in, your best foot forward, you've done what you can do, the best thing you can do is then trust that you've done your best, trust that you've given it all you have, and then just let it go and not attach yourself to the result of what might happen. Because the result you may be putting so much expectation on may or may not happen. And if you're basing your happiness on that, then it's a little precarious. But if you leave yourself open, there may be a totally different result that you couldn't have anticipated that maybe is even better for you.
Yes, everyone, she is only 31. I know everybody's saying, how in the world is a woman this young so smart already? So you're
thank you.
You've got some great ideas, and comes from deep within, and a lot of themes in this book: mental health, self-esteem, self-expression, family, self-love and acceptance, inner peace, self-help, relationships, connection to the world outside of ourselves. So it's 30 lessons. Let's see. Let's look at, we've got time to talk about another one, and you kind of highlighted chapter 9, Right or Wrong. That's what it's titled, chapter 9.
Yes. This is a particularly special one for me. It involves my parents, actually. My parents and I were picking out Christmas lights and having a little bit of a debate about what the right Christmas lights were, and ultimately it ended up kind of ensuing in an argument between my parents, having a difference in opinion of what the right Christmas lights to get for the occasion was. And I stopped and said to them, well, you know, are you guys concerned with being right, or do you want to be festive? And we sort of all stopped and went, right, you know, we're so busy saying who's right and who's wrong, we're actually missing the whole point of what we're doing, which is going to get Christmas lights to celebrate our family being together on this holiday. And so it became this really interesting thing for me to notice in my own life. Anytime I'm making myself right, if I'm having a conversation with my husband, then I'm making him wrong. And is that a relationship that I want to have? Is that a relationship I want to be in where if he's right, I have to be wrong? So we started looking at it more like a team event, as if my husband and I are on the same team. So whatever the situation is can be sort of the villain in the situation, but we're on the same team, so we really work hard to not make one another wrong. Because at the end of the day, we as a society, in order to be right and have our opinion be the right one, we sacrifice a lot of happiness. And I think that as people even just start to think about this one idea in their own life, they'll see how important it is to be right, because we're trying to validate ourselves all the time. And if we really let that go, then we'll actually find ourselves in such more state of peace and happiness, and we realize that being right really isn't worth it.
Natalie Roy, she's a student of life, as she says, taking the road less traveled and sometimes taking no road at all. But you've stood in the fork of the road at times, haven't you?
I certainly have, and I think many, many of us can relate to that, if not all of us.
And sometimes it's difficult to make a decision when, and you just kind of, as you say, enjoy the view.
Exactly. That, you know, and it's the same thing as, you know, wanting to be right or not wanting to make someone else wrong. We get so caught up that there's a right or wrong way to do something. There's a right or wrong road to take. And if there's anything that I have learned through the age that I'm in, the life I've lived writing this book, there is no right or wrong. There's what you do and there's what you don't do. And whatever you do or don't do will lead to a certain set of results and conditions and circumstance. And if you don't like them, then you do something else. And that's it. And so life is just a series of choices and decisions where you have all the power, all the time.
Natalie Roy, her book titled 30, 30 Years, 30 Lessons. Natalie, tell us how to get your book.
You can get my book at BalboaPress.com. You can get my book at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and Barnes & Noble Retailers.
And do you have a website?
I do. You can check my website out. It's NatalieRoy.com. I also have a book club that you can come and join the conversation. We do an online book club every week. We pick one chapter to focus on and talk about. So if you go to my website, NatalieRoy.com, you can get the link to come join my Facebook page for 30 and come and join our online book club and be part of the conversation.
Thank you so much, Natalie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. Really enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Get ready to laugh along with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Ali Lopreet. Friday evenings at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com. This is a truly realistic, no-nonsense, tell-it-like-it-is method that will have you laughing and crying, surviving while struggling, and hammering away at the hardships as you travel through the greatest journey of your life. Get empowered by joining thousands of other parents who have also decided to take a leap of faith into a double career with longer hours and half the pay simply because of the love they have for their children. Together, we are rebuilding a new economy that will support us rather than enslave us. Never again will we have to choose between raising our children and earning to provide for them. It won't be easy, but it will be worth it. For more on Allie and her success, check out her website, OurMilkMoney.com. So come get empowered with This Little Parent Stayed Home with Allie Lopreet, Friday afternoons at 6, 5 Central on TogiNet.com.
People think I've made it. I'm popular. I seem happy all the time. I have great clothes and I'm involved in everything. But I have questions, doubts, and fears, just like every other teenager. That's why I'm glad for Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
The choices we have to make that can alter the course of our lives. Life is too much pressure if we try to go it alone. I tune in to Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell every week to get reminded that I'm not alone. Nicole Odell is an expert on what happens in the lives of teenagers. Join her as she deals with topics like peer pressure, purity, drugs, alcohol, and many other things that might come up along the way. She writes books and speaks to people all over the place, but she says her favorite moments are when she can pull up a chair and chat with teens about what's important to us.
For more information on Nicole and her books, go to NicoleOdell.com. Then join us for Teen Talk Radio with Nicole Odell, Thursday nights at 10, 9 Central on TogiNet.com.
Teen Talk Radio, where it's all about choices.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, All Things Possible. And the author is Eliza Sarah Graham. And Eliza joins us now on Indie Book Publishing, this interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Eliza.
Hi, Steve. How are you today?
Great, and All Things Possible, great plot here. It's going to get people really thinking about who could move in next door to upset their beautiful life. But, you know, it's about a family, as you write, in transition, and a woman trying to manage all the subtle and not so subtle changes going on around her with goodness and wit. So this Vietnam vet who's suffering from post-traumatic stress syndrome moves in next door, and all of a sudden, the family's upside down. That's an interesting theme. Before we get into why, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, Eliza.
Well, my training is as a marriage family therapist. After I raised my family and have been married for quite a few years, I decided to go back and get a master's in the marriage family therapy. I have a strong interest in women's who are relocating and having a hard time adjusting. So I started to develop workshops after I got my degree for the relocated woman because they seem to lose themselves along the way. And so I spent 10 years developing that in South Africa. And then I came when we came home also, I had a workshop program here for women who sometimes just get lost in their own lives. So a lot of my personal interest is about bringing women back to themselves, and oftentimes that's at a midlife time where they have a full life behind them and they don't quite know who they are going forward. So my books, which I started writing after I retired, reflect a lot of that journey for a woman. She's usually at a crossroads, questioning where to from here. Sometimes it's a marriage issue. Sometimes it's empty nest syndrome. And so I love that theme. I love to explore that. And so when I got to All Things Possible, I wanted to drop into the family at that crossroads for the whole family. They're all at a crossroads of change. And so I think I brought in a lot of my psychological training as well as my own life experience into my books.
You say that your book, in all your books, there's three key elements in, let's see, you've written six books, right?
Right.
Geography, generations, and gatherings. Now explain these elements of your books.
Well, it almost had to be pointed out to me because it's so unconscious that I write this way. All my protagonists are family oriented, and so a lot of the themes that run throughout my books focus around bringing the family or the relationships together, usually around meals. I've been teased about this and been asked for recipes, actually, because cooking for the protagonist and bringing people together around a table is love, and for my experience. And so there's the gatherings, and sometimes it's a holiday, but in general, it's the woman brings the family together around a meal. It's really a special time. Location, turns out, is always one of my characters. It's a prominent character. It really stands out in my first book, her sense of place, and that's where I began that theme. Where we live and how we experience our environment is crucial to who we are. And I think it's really important to be surrounded in an environment that speaks to us. So my characters either leave somewhere to go to that spot, or they're already in that ideal location for themselves. And generations, and this also comes naturally to me, I write from a woman's perspective. So I'm always coming as a mother, a daughter, and a grandmother. And I love the thread of that, the teachings, the relationships, the contrast. So in almost all my books, we'll have that. We'll have a strong protagonist. We'll generally have a granddaughter, a grandchild, and a kind of a spicy grandma. Because I like a whimsical grandma, or a grandma with wisdom, a grandmother with wisdom, or something that skips a generation a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so those three things seem to just become naturally to me, because I've had to be pointed out that that's what I was doing. I was not even aware that I was actually doing that.
Well, we have Bobby Sanders and her family. She's the mom, the wife. And they live in this beautiful place in Newport Beach, California. So you've got some important aspects of your philosophy there.
Yes.
And they live really kind of this idyllic life.
Yes. Yes, they do. And they chose it. They chose where they wanted to live. They wanted to live in a place where it was a good place for children, a natural place near the water. They don't have a high standard of living, but they both are professionals. Her husband, Bud, is a landscape architect. Bobby is a interior designer. They both are self-employed and have done pretty well. They've been in their community for a long time. And they do. They live a really nice life. They're church-going people. They're good people. And it hasn't really been tested to this point, but they live a good life. Their kids are pretty normal. nice young people. Who are also at that point of being on the move. They're getting ready to get their wings and fly away. So there's that. But up until this point, yes, it's kind of an idealized family in an idealized place.
And she's got this attitude about life, especially with, I guess, neighbors, friends, family, you know, kill them with kindness. That always works. It just always works.
She was raised that way, but it's also her nature, is that Bobby comes from kindness, and she doesn't like confrontation. She's a generous person. She's a giving person. She was raised that way, but it's just basically who she is. So if a neighbor moves in, it's her nature to go to them and greet them with cookies. Naturally with her cooking, because that's her expression of love and welcoming. And it's always worked for her until the neighbor moves in next door.
Mr.
She's
Rigoni.
Never been challenged before him.
Mr. Rigoni,
and he's a Vietnam veteran, and he, we find later, has post-traumatic stress from that war. But they don't know that. Of course, the family, Saunders' family, doesn't really realize that. All they know about this man is that he's filling his front yard with some sort of a sculpture that looks to be from auto parts, and it's just throwing this family into chaos. They don't know what to do with him.
So Bud, he's having some of his own struggles all of a sudden.
Bud is having a midlife crisis, too. He's, like I say, he's been a landscape architect, a successful one, a nice, easygoing guy who suddenly wants more meaning in his life. And he's searching. He's searching, maybe it's spiritual, maybe it's career. He's not sure, but he's really going through the questioning process. And while he's doing that, he's putting the brakes on the work he's been doing, and his wife doesn't quite know what to do with him. He's also very troubled by the neighbor, and he doesn't know what to do with him. So it sets up this dynamic that kind of kicks off a lot of issues for this family. The husband has kind of stopped working. the children are thinking about flying off. One daughter is leaving for Japan to study. You've got Mr. Rigoni next door who won't respond to Bobby's kindness and neighborliness, and nor respond to Bud's efforts to get him to, you know, obey the homeowner's rules and take down his sculpture. So it sets up a tension there all around. The whole house is starting to rumble with this tension.
And even more tension, I guess, when the 16-year-old son, Cole, all of a sudden starts being friendly toward Mr. Rigoni.
He has a bond with this man, and it confounds the father, especially Bud. He doesn't understand. But Bud really, Cole, has a heart for this gentleman, and he also likes to work on his car. He's a mechanic at heart, and turns out Mr. Rigoni is a mechanic at heart, was as a young person before the war. And so there's a kind of an unexplainable bond that Cole has for him. But we find that Cole is a sage. I mean, for his age, he is the sage of the family. He is the one with the heart, the true learned teachings from his church going. He owns that. He just, that's who he is. But it really does cause conflict with his father, who doesn't care for Mr. Rigoni and doesn't understand Mr. Rigoni.
What kind of a role does Bobby's mother play in this?
She's adorable. I mean, she is like a survivor. Whimsical, funny. She's a widow and has moved into a retirement center, but she is so full of life, and everything is positive and on the go. She sees humor in most things. She's full of wisdom. She's a daily part of this family. She comes over almost every day. She's her mother, her daughter's best friend. And she brings, she neutralizes a lot of issues because she has a way about her of going with the flow. And Bobby, her daughter, doesn't like change and doesn't go with the flow. So when things get tense, in comes Catherine, the mother and the grandmother in this case, to bring humor and new ways of looking at things. And so I just love her. I just love when she comes into a scene. And I never knew what she was going to do. I was always surprised the next thing that she would do. She'll take tap dancing lessons and teach water aerobics to the geriatric women at the center. And I mean, she just, nothing stops her. She's adorable.
So what did she feel when granddaughter Pamela showed up with the fiancé from Japan?
Well, it was a surprise to everyone, but Catherine, Bobby's mother, embraced it because her curiosity for life and anything new, she just loves the Haruto, who is the young man that that the daughter brings home. And not only that, but she wants to know everything about his culture and isn't this great. And Bobby, the mother, is having such a hard time because they were raised a certain way and a certain values, and the Japanese gentleman comes back with a Buddhist upbringing and a different lifestyle, and also the threat of taking the daughter away from this home, home life. And but Catherine does what she does in life. She embraces it. She learns to make Japanese food. She learns the culture. She just, you know, supports the Pamela, the daughter, through it. And where Bobby, the mother, is really having a hard time, accepting the change and going with the flow. It's really hard for her because it's changing her life completely.
What would you say is the overriding theme of your story?
I think the overriding theme for my story is I like to look at the idea of forgiveness and real love and compassion. Compassion for people that are different than we are, people who may have had a different experience than we've had. But honestly, if there was one thing that somebody were going to take from this book, it's forgiveness. And it's something I've had to learn, and I've learned it late in life. And if you can really learn to forgive people, no matter what, if you can really get down there and forgive, you can change the world. You can change your own world. You can change your life. But if you hang on to that, if you hang on to the anger and the hate, and many times there's reasons for that anger and hate, but if you hang on to it, you're stuck with it. You're stuck with it. And it'll color your whole life from there on. And I think that's the hardest thing and the easiest thing to do is to forgive.
Well, I think we can all understand that you certainly must be a great family therapist because you,
thank you.
You are presented this so well and a lot of wisdom in this very complicated kind of plot when you dealing with relationships, which is, it's very important that we kind of think through these kinds of things because most of us are all involved in these kind of things. There's no way out.
No, it's true.
There's no way out.
It's absolutely true, yeah.
Well, Eliza, tell us how to get your book, All Things Possible.
Well, you can get my book through Balboa Press. I think it's balboapress.com. And I'm on, you can order it over the Internet, and it comes in ebook form as well. So if that's a better format for people, I recommend that. It's more affordable in some cases. So, but yes, I would go to Balboa Press to through the Internet.
Thank you so much for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Well, thank you, Steve. It's been such a pleasure talking with you. I feel like I'm in your living room.
And this interview has been brought to everyone by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.